So we are continuing in Perek Gimel. Just one thought from the end of Halacha Aleph. First of all, Robbie was asking yesterday, so where do you see this idea that, I guess we didn't get to the last lines of the Halacha, where do you see this idea that the Rambam is specifically saying, you know, you don't have to fast, etc. He says it right at the end of the Halacha, just to be clear, because we asked him that. U'bichlal hazeh, this is on page 55, right? It's the Perek Deot, Perek Gimel, the end of Halacha Aleph. ובכלל הזה, אלו שמתענים תמיד. אינן בדרך טובה. Like you get a person who's like all time fasting. You know, they're so holy, and they're divorcing themselves from the world, and they're not eating, and they're struggling, and that's not necessarily good, you know, doing without. ואסרו חכמים שיהיה אדם מסגף עצמו בתענית. Okay? חכמים, one way to understand this is, you're not allowed to make yourself miserable. Now, this is a deep thought, as funny as it may sound. You know, I once had a student, an Israelite student, and we did, this was, I don't know, second or third year that I was Israelite, and we always used to have a three-week program. And the first Shabbat they would do in the Old City, and the second Shabbat they would be off, and we would palm them out, they would go to different families. And the third Shabbat we would do in the Old City to close up the program. And one particular program, I don't remember exactly what happened, what was going on here, but we couldn't do Shabbos in the Old City. Rabbi Aaron wasn't here, and I couldn't come, whatever. So then we thought, well, why don't we just do Shabbat in Efrat? Like, you know, we're not going to cancel Shabbos. So we set them up in place, and they all came to Efrat for Shabbos. And afterwards, in the evaluations, there was like this spike. Like, it was this unbelievable Shabbos. It was the most amazing thing, transformed, whatever. So Rand and I were sitting down, we were trying to figure this out. Like, don't get me wrong, it was a nice Shabbos, but it wasn't that. I mean, it was a nice Shabbos. So I, you know, some of the students hang around for weeks after there. So I managed to talk to one of the girls who was on this program, and I asked her, like, why was that Shabbat so what, right? So she said, well, you know what? She said, I spent 3 weeks in the Old City, and don't get me wrong, it was beautiful, it was intense, it was magnificent, whatever. But it wasn't me. Like, I could never see myself being that. So I said, what do you mean by that? So she said, well, maybe it was just the people I happened to run into, but when I was walking through the Old City, even on Shabbat, it just didn't seem to me. Like, I saw a lot of people. Like, they were sitting in the square one day, or they were sitting down by the kotel. They just saw lots of people coming, you know? And lots of them, you know, not necessarily people who live in the Rova, you know, long black coats and black whatever. And she said they just didn't look happy. She said they didn't look happy. So I went to Efrat. She said, first of all, that I could see myself. Like, that just seemed a lot closer to where I'm at. And everybody walking around just seemed to be in a good space. You don't think about these things. Like, the goal is not to be so serious that you make yourself miserable. In fact, when you experience, it's one thing to experience struggle, to experience that you're working hard for something, right? But you're not necessarily supposed to be suffering. And that's what the Rambam says. V'al kol ha'dvarim ha'elu v'chayotzei ben tziva Shlomo v'amar, al titzadik harbe v'al titchakam yoter, lama tishomem. Right? Don't be too much of a tzaddik. There's a concept in Judaism called Nisayon. Okay? How does Nisayon work when you think about it? Like, what's the concept of Nisayon? What does it mean to have a Nisayon? No? What does it mean to have a Nisayon? Nisayon. Yeah?
It's an opportunity to be tested, see how far forward you can go.
Okay, so Hashem gives you this opportunity to be tested. Okay? And that's how most people look at Nisayon, right? It's a test. Right? Of course, the obvious problem with that is, and the obvious answer for that matter, right, it can't be that Hashem is testing you the way we test. Like, if I give you a test, it's because I want to see if you're getting what we're doing, or I want to know where you're at, or, you know. Hashem can't need a test. So obviously the test has to be for me. So the question is, how does a test work for me? Right? So one way of understanding that, right, is exactly that. That through a Nisayon, I actually get to see where I am, and I get to grow to where I could be. Okay? Like, for example, if you look at the story of the Akedah, Akedah Yitzchak. So at the end of the whole story of the binding of Isaac, the whole story of the Akedah, the Malach comes out, whatever that means, and says, Ata yadati, now I know, ki yireh lo kimata. By the way, this is one of the things, the Akedah, that we read every morning. Anytime you see something that we read every morning, it means this is a central idea in Judaism. Most people skip this stuff, okay? And by the way, I'm not just talking about it in yeshiva high schools and a raita. You go into most yeshivot, here and ask them to finish the sentence. I don't know, Ezu Makoman Shel Zvachim. Like, what are the places of the different karbanot? Right? That's in the karbanot in the morning. Traditionally, people say this every morning. Why do I need to know whether the shechita is batzafon or whether it's by this mizbech or that mizbech, whatever? There are deep, deep ideas there. So if you see that we read the Akedah every morning, there must be an idea in Akedah Yitzchak that's central to daily living. So this happens to be one of those ideas. That statement makes absolutely no sense. Atayadati ki yireh Elokim ata, now I know. How could the phrase now I know ever emanate from God? The concept of now doesn't even exist for Hashem, because Hashem is Hayahu Veviyeh, Hashem was, is, and will be. Right? So how do you explain that? Anybody? How do you explain that, that Hashem says at the end, yeah?
Well, because God does know the outcome, but man still has to make the choice. Meaning, as long as a man doesn't know the outcome, he still has, maybe it's an illusion of free will, but it's a very convincing illusion. So until man actually makes the choice, God's predetermination doesn't have any importance.
So then why does it say atayadati? Why does it say, now you've chosen the choice?
Because now he did.
Pardon?
Because now
so it should say, you know, ata asita kasher dibarti alecha. That'd be a great line. I could give you a great shiur on that line. Can't give it because that's not what it says, right? It says, "Itayadati." Now I know, right? It's a difficult question. So I'll tell you how the Ramban answers this question. It's a difficult question. It's just one way to look at it. The Ramban says, "Al tikri yadati ela hodati." In other words, don't look at yadati as an adverb. Look at it as a verb. I have now made known. I yadad concerning this. Ata hodati. Now I have made known. So how does Ramban explain this? Up until now, the only one who understood that you were capable of what you just did was me. Now, you know that you're capable of what you just did. And when you know that you're capable of what you just did, right, then you become capable of what you just did. You weren't there before. In other words, what a nisayon does is it actualizes potential. Okay, think about this. My brother, before I went to the army, he was in the army before I was, so he gave me Boker Tov. He gave me a number of really good pieces of advice. And one of them was, and I don't think this is just the army. I think this is a life lesson. He said, people think it's all about working out. They think it's all about muscle. They think it's all about... It's not. He said, you know what the most essential piece... He was talking about in the army, like what will make or break you? It's all about... How would you feel in that sentence?
It's all about your mind.
Pardon?
It's all about
your mind. It's all willpower. It's all koach ratzon. And the thing that I learned the most, I still remember that first masa. We were going up and down the sand dunes. It was the easiest masa on the one hand, because a masa is like a forced march, like 4 or 5 kilometers, right? But on the other hand, it was the hardest because we didn't know what we were doing. And they couldn't even take, like we had a pkida who was like our source of information. She was like the girl who brought the mail, whatever. And she liked one of the guys. So like she would tell us when they were about to like sandbag us or do stuff like that. So she said, you guys better get ready because they're doing a masa tomorrow afternoon. But here's a tip. If there's no officer when you start the masa, it means they can't go out of sight of the base. So we get there and we're all terrified of this because they've been torturing us for 2 weeks. And now it's like going to be a masa. That's supposedly terrible, right? And they make us put on all this heavy stuff, whatever. And we notice that Samal Itzik is there, but the sergeant is there, but the officer isn't there. So if the officer's not there, they can't take you outside of the base because you need an officer who can navigate and blah, blah, blah. So we feel a little sense of relief. Except in the back of my mind, there's this little, you know, like when you wake up in the morning and you're not awake yet, but the alarm bell's in the distance. So I like this alarm bell in the distance because I know that Samal Itzik is the most sadistic human being I've ever met in my life, right? So we start going on this masa up and down sand dunes. Going on sand dunes is horrendous. For every 2 steps forward, you take a step back. It's not like you're climbing up. It's like you're like Roadrunner commercials, right? So we finally get around the whole base. And basically what they did was they kept us inside of the base, and they ran us through the sand dunes around the base. And we finally come around to, there's a big base to the other side of the base, and we see the gate where we had come out of. And he says, okay, yalla, tashiru, right? We was Dernikim. He said, you know, you're going to sing now, right? So some idiot starts singing Yom Zeh Mechubad, right? One of those Derek, I wanted to shoot him. I'm like, no, that's not the song. Ah. So everybody's singing Yom Zeh Mechubad. And then we get up to the base, right? And we're up to the gate, okay? And this is great because we made it. It's an unbelievable feeling. You finished your masa. And then I hear the 2 most dreaded words a person can hear in those situations. Yemina, pnei, right, return, and we do the whole thing again. I still remember the look on Pinny, on this friend of mine's face. He like looked at me. It was this look of pure despair. Like just the world is gone. And I knew, I absolutely knew, there was just no way I could do this again. But we did it again. In fact, the best lesson that you learn from experience, like for me, any person in the army, was as far as you think you can push yourself, you can push yourself further. And by the way, if you want to know the absolute most difficult exercise I ever had in terms of willpower, pushing myself further than I could push myself, you know where it happened for me? Want to take a guess? Gush Base Medrash. I want you to know, it's no big deal to push yourself on a masa. You just put some Rambo image in your mind. You play some song, whatever it is. But when you're in a Base Medrash and it's just hard and you don't know, you're looking at the Gemara, you don't know what you're doing, and it's 9 o'clock at night, and like all these people around there, and you can always do another 10 minutes, another 20 minutes. Push yourself in those 5-10 minutes, right? So when you're in that moment, and you've gone as far as you can go, right? So you're not yet capable of doing more, but you have the potential to do more. And when you push yourself, let's say this is where you're at, this is level A. And let's say you push yourself to level B, okay? Then you will actually become at level B. In other words, what Hashem is asking you to do, basically, if you look at it this way, is to behave at level A as though you're already at level B. To fake it. And by behaving at level A as though you're already at level B, you'll get to level B. Now, there is, by the way, one theological challenge to this question, which is, when you get to level B, the nisyonot that will come your way, the challenges, which are basically opportunities to grow, they're not going to be level A challenges. Now you're going to get level B challenges. So in some ways, you don't really want to sort of succeed. Because by succeeding, it's just going to get more difficult. Pardon? Yeah, right? It's just going to get more difficult. But of course, if you don't try, or if you live to fail, then you're not really living. You might as well be dead. Right? And that's what the Rambam says here. The Rambam says, basically, right? Al ti tzadik harbe. Like if you're at level A and you're pushing yourself to level B, that's incredible. Maybe some people are capable of pushing at level C, but if you're at level A and you're trying to be at level F, you're gonna, first of all, you're gonna crash and burn, and second of all, it's not real. It's not who you are. It's not healthy. It's off. And that's where people get into trouble, right? Like imagine a guy here, no offense to anybody here, decides, I'm just gonna go in a different space. I'm gonna learn 22 hours a day. I'm gonna eat bread and water. I wanna be the Vilna Gaon. We're so far away from being the Vilna Gaon. Chances are, now look, there might be some person here who's capable of this, but chances are, by doing that, you'll have 3 incredible days, then you'll crash and burn and you'll blow the rest of your year. So you have to know where you're at, what you're capable of at, but you always have to feel like you're pushing yourself a little beyond your limit. If you feel that way at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if for some person that limit is 3 hours and for some person that limit is 6 hours. If you feel that way at the end of the day, that's how you're growing. You want to say something?
Yeah. I think the idea makes more sense within yourself than for the people around you. Like if you are genuinely at level A, but you're acting disgenuinely as if you're at level B, fine, it works for yourself, but what about all the people around you who are having relationships with who can see that you're acting like you're at level B, but you're really at level A?
So what you're referring to, in other words, the challenge of attempting to behave as though you're at a different level in order to get there, right? And making sure that it doesn't become, you know, falsehood, fake, right? Arrogance. There's actually a halachic terminology for that. The halachic terminology for that is yore. Yore is a term that's used in Gemara, where someone does something that looks impressive, but it might have the impact on others around you to distance them because it looks like pride or arrogance. You know, like for example, there's a discussion. You know, there's a big discussion halacha. When you wear a talis, do you put this? The Shulchan Aruch says, based on the Gemara, that some say when you get married, right, which is what my minhag, but that you take the talis and you put it over your head. And it's supposed to be like a lion's mane, right? And it's supposed to remind you that at the end of the day, that you're, you know, sort of, you're of the lions of Yehudah, and what that means, that's a very deep idea, whatever, right? Okay? So the Gemara says, can you do this in Bar Mitzvah, or whatever, the Shulchan Aruch talks about this. So there's some who paskin, but there's a day that says that you don't do it when you're a little boy. You don't put a talis over your head when you daven as a little boy. Why? Because it's yore. Because your friends are going to look at you and they're going to think like, oh, George thinks he's super tzaddik. There are examples like this, right? Let's say a guy's learning. You ever notice people shuckle? Right? People do this. Why do people do this? I don't know. Some people say it came from the winters of Poland because it keeps you warm. Or Bavel. I don't know. Some people say because, you know, like in Yemen, they used to have one book for six guys. So one guy would look in and read and then go out. And then there are all sorts of different theories as to this, whatever. But let's say you decide you really want to get into it. It happens to be, it's very dangerous because it can mess up your back, but it happens to be.
I can't sit still sometimes.
Yeah, right. You know, it happens to be. It could be there are lots of Yidden who learn Gemara who are ADD, and we just didn't know what ADD was back then. That could be. But it happens to be that it helps you to focus sometimes. Like when I'm really tired and I'm learning, I'm trying to get in, you know, so I'll just go like this a little bit and bring me into it. Now, let's say you get really into it and you go like this, you know, or you see sometimes people, they're davening, and they're like, you know, 50 miles an hour. You know, you do have an impact on people around you, and you have to be careful of that. That's called yoreh. And I think that the answer to the question is how big the range is. In other words, you develop a sense of just how big the range is. You know, I had a Rebbe in Gush, Rav Bick, and I think I told you the story. There's a new one. And I was in his shir for like the first few months that I was there, and then for Shana Aleph. And then they switched me into, when I came back, they switched me into Rav Midan shir. And I was like struggling with that because, oh no, they switched me into whatever, it doesn't matter, Rav Rapport. And I was struggling with that, like in Shana Bet, because I had finally figured out like how Rav Bick's mind worked. And he would sort of give a shir and prepare Gemara and whatever it might be. And at the beginning, I had no idea what was flying. And now I was getting to the point where I could look at a Rishon and I could figure out, like, so why is the Ramban say this? And why does the Rashba say this? And why are they disagreeing? And whatever it was that I was doing. So I went to talk to Rav Bick because I was upset that they were switching me into Rav Rapport. She has a totally different style. And I said to him, like, I feel like, you know, I'm getting this. And he's like, listen to me. And at one point I said to him, you know, like, it took me a long time to get the point that I really feel comfortable in shir. So he looked at me and goes, oh. He goes, you feel comfortable in shir? I said, yeah, I really feel like I'm getting it. He goes, that's a kiss of death. You got to go to another shir. You're not supposed to feel comfortable. And he walks away. Right? Real warm, cuddly guy, right? So I thought about that a lot. It's true. In other words, like, pushing yourself to the point where it's not so comfortable is good. Pushing yourself to the point where you're suffering, don't be too much of a tzaddik. You know what I mean?
So the solution is to be a fake?
No, so the solution is to be pushing yourself to a certain point. If you're pushing yourself and you know that you're doing it for the right reasons, part of being,
so
part of, listen,
no,
we give off energy. We give off energy. You walk into a room, you meet certain people, they just have good energy. They're in a good space. One of the ways that you give off good energy is if what you're doing, you're really doing for the right reasons. Faking it is when you're doing it for the wrong reasons, right? You have to know whether you're doing this for the right reasons. If you're sitting... Absolutely, you could be faking it. Sometimes faking it is good and sometimes it's not. It depends. Depends on why you're doing it. The Gemara does say, mitoch shelo lishma balishma. So sometimes there's a different concept, which is I know that I'm not...
says that if you're not learning, if you're learning not lishma, you're going to die.
That's an agadita, what that means, but that's true. If Torah is supposed to give you life, but Torah becomes not a vehicle for good, but becomes idolatry, then absolutely, it becomes a sam. Zacha sam chayim, lo zacha sam amavet. Right? Absolutely, it becomes poison. It's true. If you're studying a lot of Torah because you want people to think you're a Talmud Chacham, it destroys your life. That's, by the way that you sometimes hear terrible stories about, you know, some great Torah scholar who's doing horrendous things. Because he may have gotten a lot of Torah up here, but it didn't go in here because it was coming from the wrong reasons. So that's a whole, right? But that's in terms of the concept of Nishayon. No, this is a line that every person has to struggle with for himself. By the way, you have to be very careful. Because sometimes the Yetzirah gets involved. It's great to hear, don't be too much of a tzaddik. Because then every time I have a chance to do something that's a little beyond my comfort zone, I don't want to be too much of a tzaddik. So you have to be careful that you don't use this idea and abuse it to the point where now you don't have to grow. And I think deep down a person knows when he's growing in a healthy way. And if not, and this is why it says a Selach HaRav, you have to have people in your life who can point this out to you. You have to have people in your life with whom you have healthy and honest relationships so that they can point out to you when something's off. You know? Okay. So let's look at Halacha Bet, because I think Halacha Bet is the real answer to this question. Okay? So Tzarich HaAdam...
What's the big question here about pushing yourself?
No, it's the question that Aaron was asking, which is like, how do I know the line between sort of trying to grow on the one end and faking it on the other? Tzarich ha'adam, sheyechaven libo, v'chol ma'asav, kulam, leida et Hashem baruch hu bilvad. A person has to set his heart. Kavana is all about kivun. It's all about direction. It's all about knowing what the purpose is, right? How do you walk out a door in the morning? How is it you decide which way to go? How do you know which way to go? Because you know why it is you're trying to get wherever it is that you're going. So that tells you which way to go, right? If I'm walking through the river because I want to see if I can recruit students for a summer inward brand program, then I'll walk through the square and chances are I'll meet somebody. But if I'm walking through the river because I want to get to lunch because the student is waiting to have a schmooze, so then I'll walk down Batei Machzor because I won't run into anybody. I'll get there quicker. So kivun relates very much to kavana because kivun is direction and kavana is intent. Okay, so you have to focus and direct your heart and everything that you do towards. Pardon? Shiachaven is to direct. Leida et Hashem Baruch Hu Bilvad. Just to know Hashem. In other words, yesterday we were talking about the idea that the Rambam's mitzvah, Leida Shiach Hamalot, to know that Hashem exists, is really very much about developing a relationship with Hashem. And this is really the answer to your question. And I'll give you an example. I think you learn a lot about yourself and who you really are from those moments in time where you have to make snap decisions. Sometimes you don't have the luxury. Sometimes you struggle with a decision. You think about it for a long time. But sometimes you don't have the time to do that. You know, I was seeing a couple of guys last night, and the story of Yosef Goodman came up. There's a family in Efrat that I'm close with who he basically runs the pizzeria in Efrat. When you come again to Efrat, if you get to the pizzeria, you'll see a picture of him up on the wall. Marvin Goodman and Ann got married on the west side. I grew up in the show they got married in. And they came to Israel and they have, that's an interesting question how you answer that question, but like 8, 9 kids. And about, what's the Yonatan's 60s, about 3 years ago, we were actually preparing for Yonatan's Bar Mitzvah. It was Thursday evening. Yonatan's Bar Mitzvah was that Shabbos. And we got word that their son Yosef was in a very elite unit called Maglan, which certainly not on tape, we're going to talk about what they do, but they're an elite unit within the paratroopers. And one of the things they do is they test out experimental parachutes and they do all sorts of crazy things. And they know their way around all sorts of different countries. And so they were doing some test jump and something went wrong with his parachute and his parachute got entangled in his commander's parachute. Okay? Now this was a low-level jump. You're not jumping from 20,000 feet, you're jumping from like 1,200 feet. 1,400 feet. So you don't have time, right? And I'm not a paratrooper, but I guess like the way they were tangled up, they were both going to die, right? And he was kind of underneath his commander. So he pulls out his knife, okay? And he starts cutting the ropes to his parachute. And his commander is screaming at him not to cut the ropes because the commander is trying to throw out his reserve chute, whatever. And he gave a hesped and he eulogized, that moment. And Yosef had this look of determination. And then he looked up at him and he smiled. This is all within a second. And he cut the ropes. And Yosef fell, basically. It's not clear why he wasn't able to get out his reserve chute or whether it also got messed up. And then he fell to his death. And, you can imagine how you feel as a commander that your soldier, who was an incredible boy, died for you. Like, how do you walk around with that? And that's a whole other discussion, how he spoke and how Ann spoke and how Marvin hugged him and how close they are today and all of that. And I thought about that story, like, you don't have time to think about that. In a moment like that, you just find out who you are. You know what I mean? Why am I here? What's the purpose of being here? What is all this for? If you fill yourself up with Hashem to the point that it's not about you, that you're here for something greater than you, that there's a purpose to who you are, then everything that comes in your life challenges you with that question. Everything. It doesn't matter if it's, we have, supposedly, I never know whether these people come or not come, but there's like a yeshiva high school, Yula from Los Angeles, and there's a few students, I met them when I was there, and they're in Israel, doing the Let's Visit Yeshiva, and they can come visit us today, wherever it is, right? And so you think like they're coming here, and I think they're coming here because they want to check out a writer, but that's not why, we don't know why they're coming here. Statistically, some of these boys will never come to a Raita. So then why are they here? How do I know why they're here? Maybe they're here because they need to meet somebody in this room. And it has nothing to do with a Raita. I have no idea. All I know for sure is that if they walk into this room, and what if, by the way, you're sitting and learning, and you're so into your learning, you don't even notice they're here. You know what that tells me? That tells me they weren't here for you. Like, you didn't need whatever it was they came to bring you, and they didn't need whatever you had to offer them. Right? But if you offer them, for all I know, it's a simple thing. Like, I happen to think, you know, one of the boys here at a certain point, Mordechai, whatever, was checking out a couple of the yeshivot because he was struggling, stay, go, whatever. And he went to a particular yeshiva, which I thought would be a great fit for him. I thought it would be really good for him. And he came back. He said, there's just no way I go to yeshiva like that. I said, why? He said, because I was there for like a day, whatever it was, day and a half. Nobody came over and said hello to me. Not the boys, not the rabbi, whatever it is. So I don't know what was really going on, but it doesn't matter. The person could walk away with that perception. That's terrible. Can you imagine walking into a Makom Torah? I saw, it was like 2-3 weeks ago, there was a woman who walked in here. She was like looking for someone. And she walked into the back of the base medrash, and one of the guys, doesn't matter who, noticed her. He was in the middle of learning. So he got up and he walked over to her and like said something along the lines of, I guess, can I help you? And she smiled and they had somebody in there, and then I saw her go through the door. Like, that's just, so we take that for granted. Oh, yeah. Always look on the bright side of life, right? So you understand? So if you fill yourself, okay? If you fill yourself with this, like, why is this halacha? Why is this halacha coming right after that halacha? Look at the rest of this halacha. V'yeshivto v'kumo v'dibura kol umat zeh adamah. When you sit, when you get up, when you speak, all of it with this in mind. Does this help me to develop my relationship with Hashem? Does this help me? And what does develop my relationship with Hashem really mean on a practical level? It means figure out what I'm doing here. Like when we talked about tefillin, I told you that and when we talked about this yesterday, I told you that, you know, the whole idea of binding yourself in tefillin is dvekut, is to wrap yourself up with Hashem. So how do you cling to Hashem? Because you're trying to figure out why Hashem put you here and what your purpose is in everything. So first of all, you can never have a bad day. You could never be mean to a person for no reason if you really immersed yourself in this life. Like, think about this, by the way. So you run into some guy, and he looks externally, whatever your image of a religious person is, like a person who's religious. This should be a person who represents Judaism. And then for whatever reason, in that interaction, you realize there's something off. He's just rude. He's not nice. He's doing something not nice. What's really going on in that moment? What's the issue there? That person has a problem with his relationship with Hashem. That person has a bitachon issue. Because if you could really have a deep relationship with Hashem, you couldn't behave that way. You couldn't. Because the person standing next to you is created in the image of Hashem. How could you possibly behave that way, right? And don't get me wrong. I don't want anybody to think that just because you teach this, that means you've gotten there. Like, we're all human here. We all have moments like that. But what is that moment? Like, someone does something to you and you get upset. And you yell, and then you walk away and you realize, that's just a terrible thing I just did. There's just no reason to yell. What really happened? You had this momentary lapse in your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How do you get back? You reapply yourself to trying to figure out why you had that experience and what Hashem wants of you. And then when you go back to that person, it's not about you. It's not even about him. It's about something bigger than you. And that's the root of Hilchot Deot. That's how you work on your character flaws. That's how you become a better human being. That's, by the way, why I think that if a person doesn't have a relationship with Hashem, this is a much more difficult journey. It's a much more difficult journey. It doesn't mean, by the way, that we don't have an innate sense of good and evil inside of us. And, you know, for me, that comes from Hashem anyway. But it's a much bigger struggle. But if that's your direction, then that's an unbelievable vehicle to becoming a better human being. Right? And in everything. And just to, right? And look at maybe the next line. Kate said, "Kishe yisavi yitain." See, I love this. This is 900 years ago. And the Rambam understands that the first example is business. Everybody's good at being a Yarei Shamayim in the Beis Medrash. No problem to be a Yarei Shamayim on Yom Kippur and Shul. Can you be a Yarei Shamayim when you've got a client? Can you be a Yarei Shamayim when you're trying to do business with someone? You know, my life is much easier because I work in the world of chinuch. I think it's much more challenging to do this in the world of business. You go out there and if you really behave as a human being should behave, you will lose business in your life. And maybe someone will take advantage of you, but what's the point in the end? Oh, yes, sem alachal kolzhar, you're working for a living. Lo yehebili boli kibbutz mamam levad. Don't let it be just about the money. Because if it's just about the money, it doesn't last. You meet people who feel that they have to get there, they have to get ahead, they have to, you know, Think about it. You're going to leave yeshiva, and you're going to go to college. Why are you going to college? You're going to college because you got to get a BA. Why do you got to get a BA? Because you want to go to graduate school. And maybe you'll work before graduate school so you can get into a good graduate school. And why are you going to a good graduate school? You're going to a good graduate school, you're going to get a good job. And why do you need a good job? Well, so you can have the money. And the money helps you do good things, and you want to have a wife and children, you can support them, whatever it is. And what's the point of all that? What's the point of all that? I meet people and... Pardon? To do the whole thing again. Right? You know, make aliyah. You know how much money you will save? If you have four children, do you know how much money you will save by living in Israel and not having to pay tuition? Anyone want to take a guess?
A lot.
Close to $2 million. Over the space of summer camps, 12 years, whatever. $2 million. How long will it take you to earn $2 million? Make aliyah. You save yourself $2 million. I won the lottery. It's kabbalt. Right? But what's interesting is, and I'm not judging people. I meet people who are there and they work hard and they earn a lot of money. And then you meet people here and they work hard and they earn less money, maybe. And to me, the measure of it is whether they're happy. Are they happy? Are they achieving something? Is it making a difference in their life? That's what the Rambam's saying here. You got to begin with the end in mind. See, we don't do that. We get so stuck in the journey. We forget what the point of the whole journey is. We also get tremendously impacted by how other people view the journey. And by the way, nobody should misinterpret this. There's nothing wrong with going to college. You know, that's altiyat tzaddik, you know, don't be too much of a tzaddik. There's nothing wrong with going to college. There's nothing wrong with growing, nothing wrong with going to grad school, nothing wrong with gaining a profession. You should have a good profession. It's important to have a good profession. You just have to always ask yourself, why do I have this profession? Why am I doing this? You know, if you're going into law school because you can make a difference in people's lives, because if somebody's in trouble and they need a good lawyer and you can be that person and you can be the lawyer who's honest and you can be the lawyer who's a mensch. By the way, much, much, much harder to be an honest lawyer than it is to be an honest rabbi. Much harder. So if you can succeed in being an honest lawyer, you're probably on a much higher madriga.
How many honest lawyers have there ever been?
That's true. There was one once in Persephone, but you know he died. But you understand? In other words, it's just about keeping the goal in mind.
Where's Persephone?
No. Yeah, right. Okay? So let's stop here because we're pushing the envelope. Okay? Okay? And we'll continue this line of thought tomorrow. Any questions? No? Cool? Boker Tov. Shkoyach. Chumash, guys. Hang on, let me just turn this off.